Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
I'm Eben Novi Williams.
That was a great punch there. I like that.
It's like the hyphen takes everything out of his air.
I'm Michael Barr, and this is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. Disclaimer time.
Oh, right at the top. I love it.
Right here, disclaimer. Now, we're taping this the day before this airs on a Wednesday, so we're taping this on Tuesday.
Do you know why we're doing this?
Tell us.
Well, like, do you know why?
Well, I think...
Which holiday is it, Barr?
It is a holiday that...
Damn.
I love it. I love that.
I'm trying to find...
Is it the Festival of Lights?
Is this Festivus?
Is this Festivus for the rest of yous?
Would you...
Medina, would you like to clue him in?
I know it's a holiday.
Yeah, it's a holiday.
I don't want to say the wrong holiday because I don't want to insult anybody.
Okay.
So please.
It's Yom Kippur.
That's what I thought, but I didn't want to say
it. Maybe that's what I thought.
But I didn't. If
you had to put something down on a test, you would have put Yom Kippur.
Yes, I would have.
You wouldn't have put Rosh Hashanah, spelled it wrong.
No, I would have put Yom Kippur.
You say Kippur. You're not one of the Yom Kippur. I mean, you know, Hanukkah, you can go the CH,
Yom Kippur technically start this evening, or how does that work?
Look at it. We're not explaining the whole holiday. Okay. Everybody can go to the Google if they need to know more about Yom Kippur.
Well, I thought at least people would have off today, too. You know, I don't know.
No.
Welcome to
off
Bloomberg
today.
Business of Jewish Holidays.
That's right. And you guys are my mishpuchas.
There we go.
You can look up mishpucha, too.
Hey.
What are we talking about?
We got to start here with the NFL Hall of Famers. They're talking about, hey, it's time to boycott future induction ceremonies unless their demands are met. Now, what demands are we talking about?
Well, Eben, they want money, right?
They want money. Yeah.
There you go. They want money. What else do they always want?
It's funny. Everybody made such a big stink about Terrell Owens missing the Hall of Fame induction this year. This seems like a much bigger bigger story and probably a better reason to consider skipping. NFL players, you know, older players, Hall of Famers, you know, who, as they say in this letter to Roger Goodell, they're saying that they kind of built the backbone of the league that now makes $14 billion a year. A lot of them are running low on money. A lot of them are struggling from a health perspective. They are looking for more support monetarily from a health standpoint.
Let's say what they want. They in essence want a salary.
It's one of the things on the list
for
is
what?
A salary. Yeah, a share of league revenue.
Right. They want to get paid as if they're working in the NFL, which they are not.
And there are a lot of Hall of Famers that signed off on this, including Jim Brown, Earl Campbell, Richard Dent, Carl Eller. I mean, I can keep going. But yeah. There are a lot of Hall of Famers.
A lot of guys played when you watch football.
Bob. Yeah, they cast. they call into question Rodgers' salary, which is, you know, upwards of $40 million a year.
But now they're saying that he shouldn't do some other projects like the Hall of Fame in Canton,
there's
Ohio.
$1 billion renovation project in Canton right now.
Now there's better use for that money. Like, us.
Well, here's what they say. Meanwhile, many of us Hall of Fame players can't walk, and many can't sleep at night. More than a few of us don't even know who we are or where we are. Our long careers left us especially vulnerable to the dangers of this violent sport, especially those intentionally hidden from us. You know, so this is a similar argument that we've seen from players in the concussion lawsuits as well, you know, essentially saying that for years the league possibly knew or turned a blind eye to the dangers that they were subjecting players to, and now this generation of players,
sue the league and don't ask for a salary.
Well,
which they've tried, right? They've gone the health route, and now they're using another level.
That is your vehicle.
I guess
if you need some leverage, right? So they have two pieces of leverage here, two main principal pieces of leverage. One, they're acting in the collective. This isn't one guy. If the Hall of Fame ceremony and the whole bunch of Hall of Famers don't show up, and it sort of puts a negative light on the whole event and the whole thing, that's leverage. Two, next year the NFL is celebrating its 100th year. You can bet they're having big time things planned for 100, and to not have these names, the guys who built through the public knows involved, that surely would hurt those efforts.
And well, these guys are big name. I mean, as Michael said, you know, when some of these guys talk, there are a lot of fans out there who listen, and there is leverage in that as well.
Joe Namath, Curtis Martin. I mean, again, I can go on. And you have to remember too, when these guys played, there was the theory is like, hit me high, but don't hit me low, because they were worried about getting a leg injury.
Yeah.
And now it's the exact opposite.
and all the changes that the NFL is making now to make its game safer, these are the players that played well before those rules were ever changed.
Well, then plus two is now you're seeing, now there's a rule out there about the quarterback, and they're trying to protect the quarterback again, which brings me to the Clay Matthews hit during the Packers-Vikings game, which brought a penalty which shouldn't have been a penalty. Have we gotten to the point now, it's like, yes, listen, I'm all about protecting the players, but now have we gotten to a point where it's like, well, wait a minute, the NFL is a violent game in itself.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
And Richard Sherman, right? I mean, this is the funny thing to me about the bedfellows that the watering down of football has made. You know, you have Richard Sherman and Donald Trump, two people who politically are at way opposite ends of the spectrum and who have butted heads publicly in the past. You know, they're both using the exact same phrasing. This is eventually going to become flag football.
Football.
This issue has
deflection and deception and speed.
This issue has pushed people who are normally totally at odds and don't agree on anything into kind of the same camp of criticizing the game itself.
But the referee can make a mistake on a play, and maybe that Clay Matthews is one of them. But I don't understand how any player, any NFL player, knowing what they know now, can argue with rules changes designed to keep them from sustaining serious side effects and injury. It doesn't make sense to me. And I've said forever, the NFL and anyone wishing to make football safer has to stop talking to the players. They have a player mentality. It's lost on many. It's lost. Just stop talking to the players. You know who you talk to, Barr? And we were joking about it beforehand, like how much control we have here at home. You want to change things in the NFL? You talk to the mothers and you talk to the wives. That's where you send your message. And when the wife is every day to the husband, what are you, crazy? This rule is designed so that you're here for your kids, that you can pick up your kids and play with your kids and know who you are. Listen to what the letter to the NFL said. A lot of us don't know who we are and where we are. You want that? You want that as your future? And then the guys will flippantly say, this one drives me nuts. Oh, I know my future and I'll gladly take it to play in this league. That's just stupid.
Well, the movie Concussion, by the way, anybody that has not seen it, go out and see it. Rent it, do whatever. It really tells the story about what NFL players have to deal with. Having said that,
I've spoken to the wives. When I was doing some stories on this, I spoke to the wives. I spoke to the mothers. These are the folks who are most concerned and most willing to take action, because if they need to be protected from themselves, that's who's going to do it.
You think about the Tony Dorsetts. I mean, I can keep going on about what's left. And Bob Costas, he got into big trouble for saying, hey, these guys.
Not only that, he said, I'm done with football. He's like, I don't want to do it anymore.
I mean, but he got in trouble for it because he said, look at this sport. These guys, there's nothing going to be left of these guys.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's not exactly a message that a broadcast partner wants out there when you're paying billions of dollars to associate yourself with the league.
Wisconsin sports program at risk if athletes are paid. What's this all about?
Yeah, this is silly.
I love it. Evan, this is great. Evan has some strong feelings on this one because he has reported so much.
His nostrils flared. Yeah, Did you see it?
Normally it's like, because we're saying something really silly and he gets that look on his face.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he has reported so much on the business of college football that when he hears a tired argument, the eye roll and the indignation comes out. Evan, take it away.
Yeah, so as many of our listeners probably know, there is a fairly high-profile lawsuit going on in the Bay Area right now. This is probably the most legitimate and best chance challenge that college athletes have of overturning the NCAA rules on compensation for players. And part of that argument, the NCAA, in defending its rules, is essentially arguing that fans only watch college sports because it's amateur. So paying athletes in any capacity would mean that they would turn away from the game. Or B, arguing that paying athletes would restrict them from participating in the academic side of institutions. There is a third argument being pushed and, you know, carried water yesterday by this University of Wisconsin, Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank, where big schools are claiming that they will drop sports if college athletes get paid.
There's too much money there.
Exactly. This is akin to saying that we won't shuttle our students around if the price of gas goes up. You know, it's that silly. The Wisconsin athletic program makes upwards of $150 million a year. It's one of the few that is balanced in that it doesn't take any money away from the academic side of the school. If players in basketball and football have to be paid a little bit, if some sort of stipend, they will find a way to pay that. The University of Wisconsin is not going to drop all of this.
I'd love to see the endowment, the quarter. What do you call it? The quarterback endowment. I'll pay the like. Who wouldn't want their name on the quarterback endowment? What rich donor?
Absolutely. Yeah. And they're depending on what the ruling is. If this does have to be, if schools do start paying athletes, and the University of Wisconsin will to stay competitive. Assistant coaches is certainly an area where you could see some money being shaved, maybe even head coach contracts.
Strength coaches. That's my favorite. Exactly, the strength coach. The million dollar strength coach. Yeah, that's my favorite.
They will find areas to shave money out of so that they can stay competitive in college football and college basketball.
See, here's my theory about college sports.
Clown music.
Here it is.
Cue the clown music.
This is it.
I love that we know when it's coming. I mean, it doesn't make it hard.
Yeah,
for
I just okay, here it comes. It's the same reason. Oh, man. People root for college teams for the same reason that they root for professional football team, because they have an emotional attachment to the college team like they have to the pro team. Like, people from Alabama either went to Alabama, they live in the Alabama area, and wow, Roll Tide.
So sorry, Auburn.
Yeah.
sorry, all you Auburn people.
Yeah, University of Michigan, you either went to the University of Michigan, it's like, there's my team, or you were from the area.
Your family has a tradition back to the school. You had the sweatshirt when you were growing up.
And you've never rooted for a player that was there for more than 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, so it's even stronger, I would say, that the college.
I would say the emotional attachment is even stronger. Bart, we've had the discussion. We've asked some people, if Michigan and Ohio State played a football game, all the players on the team went to a neutral field, and one wore green and one wore purple, and you said, "Hey, the players from Michigan and Ohio State are playing today. Now, the green team is Michigan, the purple team is, you know, Ohio State." How many people would go?
Yeah, I see your point.
But when you're wearing the maize and blue.
That's right.
And
With the marching band.
And it's got the name of the school across. There is great value. This doesn't mean that the players shouldn't be. That's not what I'm saying. But there has to be a recognition that the brand name of the schools offer tremendous value and draw for the sport.
There is a reason why. And I'm going to admit it. And everybody knows I'm a huge Detroit guy. So I love my Detroit Lions. But there's a little side of me that says, all right, Tom Brady, how are you doing? And the reason why, as everybody knows, Brady came out of the University of Michigan.
Remember the time Donovan McNabb and Syracuse went to the Big House and beat Michigan? I do.
Hey, man, it's time to move on to the next topic. moving right
Syracuse
along.
Syracuse just beat Florida State, by the way, and I don't care if they're terrible. We had Evan and I were arguing this yesterday upstairs. I don't care that Florida State right now is terrible. Syracuse, which couldn't beat anybody the last few years, beat Florida State. I know that name.
By the way, how about the irony that the air conditioning wasn't working in the Carrier Dome?
Is there air conditioning? I don't think there is air conditioning in the Carrier Dome.
Their name on a building and doesn't do the air conditioning.
It's like 2 degrees all the time. I don't think there is air conditioning in the Carrier Dome. Which is why they're doing
the
whole
thing. They kept
talking
about the temperature on the field. I thought it was funny that was in the Carrier Dome.
Major League Lacrosse invests in its players. Explain.
Well, I guess if your players have gripes, paying them more. What are they proposing, like 50% pay raises here?
A raise in the salary cap. I don't know exactly what the percentage is.
It's a lot of money. Yeah. If you don't 51%. 51%. There you go. That's a lot.
Yeah.
If you don't know much about MLL and the players, a lot of them, many have second jobs. Many on Wall Street, as a matter of fact, they played a lot. But a lot of guys have second jobs, or I should say first jobs, and then lacrosse is just sort of their sideline. You know, they leave work early, go to practice, because it's just not enough money to live on. So, you know, if you want the best players in the world, and that's what they have, and you want to keep them, you better pay them. And I think they're recognizing that.
This is the outdoor lacrosse league for folks like me who often get them confused. This change comes with what seems like a pretty big PR push by new league commissioner Sandy Brown and also owners to say that this is kind of a new era in MLL. You know, just looking at some tweets here, the Atlanta Blaze said that the owners' meetings earlier this month were a quantum leap in the right direction. The owner of the Chesapeake BayHawks, Brendan Kelly, said that in my 8 years of owning a team, this was the most productive owners' meeting ever. They are clearly, whether it's fully accurate or not, they are pushing this as a new era for MLL.
In a world of OTT bar, you don't need to aggregate 60 million people, 25 million people like the NFL does on a Sunday. Can you get 15, 20,000, 50,000, 100? Can you build eventually an audience that'll pay 10, 15 bucks a month because they're such big fans of the sport and they want it when they want it, how they want it. They're really passionate about it. Can you build that sort of audience? And if you can, then you've got a real business.
And one of the big boos and the things that's been in an arrow in lacrosse's quiver for so long is that their audience.
An arrow in lacrosse's quiver.
Their audience is generally, you know, better off financially than your average sports
nice
fan.
Demo. Affluent.
Exactly. You know, the folks that played lacrosse growing up are more likely to be in an upper class demographic. And that means that it might be easier or it should be less of a tough sell.
So they have money to spend.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, if you're going to advertise, you want to advertise to people who have money to spend.
Thank you all for listening to the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. I'm Michael Barr, along with Scott Sosnick and Evan Novy Williams.
We are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday exploring the world of money and sports.
Join us again at the end of the week when we speak with Brett Yormark, the man who runs the Barclays Center and the Brooklyn Nets.
Who?
Brett Yormark. What do you mean, who?
Wow, I didn't know that.
You didn't know what? That he was on the show or that's what he did?
No, I knew he was on the show, but you mentioned the second half of that.
He's the CEO of Brooklyn Sports and Entertainment, the parent company of the Barclays Center, the Brooklyn Nets, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. No, but didn't you mention something else about that? Well, never mind. I didn't know that he
Clown
was.
Music at the
I
end.
I didn't know.
Brett Yormark later this week.
Yeah.
Love anyway, Brett. Love Brett.
No, he's a good man. I just didn't know his full title. I knew some of the title, but.
There you go.
Hey, I'm an honest man. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports on Bloomberg Radio around the world and online as an Apple Podcast.